Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine gave me a book for a review, Our Haunted Planet by John A. Keel. What I would like to do for a review is read a most interesting chapter. And it is really great food for thought. It gave me whole new avenue to explore as far as the UFO phenomena. This chapter is called Mimics of Man. The animal world is filled with redundancies. There are insects that resemble twigs and sticks, fish that look like harmless underwater plants, animals that appear to be rocks and ferns. Some non-poisonous snakes imitate the coloring and appearance of their deadlier cousins. Numerous tasty insects discourage their enemies by imitating poisonous centipedes and scorpions. The animals and insect world is thronging with fakers and imitators and cunning masters of camouflage. One insect is so cleverly disguised that it can march along with a formation of fierce army ants unnoticed. It even imitates the scent of the army ants. Man, the most vicious and wanton killer of the animal world, and the natural enemy of all wild things, has his imitators too. Overt contacts between man and para-man have numbered in the millions throughout history. Legend and lore are rich with such incidents of contact. Our great religions are founded upon encounters with angels and demons. The annals of psychic phenomena are filled with accounts of seemingly chance meetings with these ultra-terrestrials. Some of them seem dull and inconsequential, and even easily explainable. Others are witnessed by groups of reliable people and produce testimony that could have been written by a drunken science fiction author. Living among us, undetected, may be creatures, not necessarily alien, with all the outward appearance of human beings. Ufologist Alex Saunders wrote in Quest magazine, October 1969, "The mimic would of necessity be a lone wolf, likely living in a large bustling city where the eccentric and the odd may flourish unhindered. For it is a curious fact in nature that which is in plain view is often best hidden." Another famous ufologist, Amy Michael, has also commented on these mysterious mimics. "Certain cases have been checked and found to be perfectly authentic, but they are so absurd because they are mimicked that folk do not dare talk about them. No useful research can ever be done so long as absurdity produces complexes in us." This is The Humanoids, a special issue of the Flying Saucer Review, London, England. Early man was very aware of the existence of these mimics, intended to separate them into two groups, gods and demons. All religions have always warned their fellows or followers to be cautious of false angels and demigods. The Bible repeatedly discusses these entities and their influence upon man, always describing them as human-like beings, usually traveling in threes and possessing remarkable superhuman powers. "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares," we are warned in Hebrews 13:2. Three men, usually of oriental countenance and dressed in sober black clothing, playing important roles in both flying saucer and religious lore. For years, the flying saucer researchers who encountered these men in black believe they were secret agents of the CIA sent to harass them. These men in black have been seen most often riding around in large black automobiles, usually Cadillacs. They have engaged in frightening tactics, harassing amateur UFO sleuths. There are hundreds of reports from all over the world in which these mysterious gentlemen have approached UFO witnesses and investigators, warning, even threatening them to be silent about what they have seen. Since these entities in their big black automobiles have an uncanny talent for disappearing into thin air, investigators examining the story of their victims had tended to dismiss such accounts as lies and hallucinations. Then, as has happened in many other cases, when these skeptical investigators had men in black encounters of their own, they have panicked in confusion. There has been an appalling number of sudden deaths, suicides, nervous breakdowns among UFO investigators in the past 20 years. On a religious level, these same men in black answer the same description of the UFO harassers, have always been regarded as agents of the devil, or the devil himself. The antics of these characters have kept the devil myth alive into modern times. There are still numerous religious cults hopelessly engaged in battling and trying to outwit them, but they always manage to stay one jump ahead of their pursuers. Most of their deeds and manipulations appear to be nothing more than mischievous games. The activities of these parahumans are largely confined to specific areas of this planet, where they appear and reappear century after century. The angels keep their ancient places, poet Francis Thompson wrote. Thus, there are many haunted places all over the world, shunned by ancient man or made sacred by him. These are precise geological locations, and anyone digging into the history and lore of such locations will find thousands of accounts of ghosts, demons, monsters, flying saucers, pinpointed within a few square miles and covering 1,000 years or more of time. To UFO cultists, such places are windows, entry points for spaceships from some distant planet. Cultists teach that these are gateways, weak spots in the Earth's etheric envelope through which beings from outer space-time continuums seep through into our reality. Sussex County in England is one gateway, as are the Mississippi Valley, the Ohio Valley, and parts of our western states, such as the area around Prescott, Arizona. There are literally thousands of these weak spots all over our planet. Paranormal and supernatural activities in these areas seem to be controlled by complicated cyclic factors. Periodically, all hell breaks loose in all these areas simultaneously, and then we have a flap or wave of UFO sightings, apparitions, poltergeists, sudden, inexplicable disappearance of animals and human beings, mysterious fires, and even a form of mass madness. Researchers are only now beginning to untangle the cycles involved. For some unknown reason, a high proportion of all these activities seem to occur on Wednesday and on the 24th of the month. This has been a stable factor throughout history. The biblical prophet Zechariah reported in Zechariah 1:7 an angelic visitation upon the 24th day of the 11th month, circa 520 BC. The most famous flying saucer sighting of modern times, that of private pilot Kenneth Arnold near Mount Rainier in Washington, occurred on June 24, 1947. Note that many of the events discussed throughout this book, Our Haunted Planet, took place on the 24th of the month. Paranormal events also seem to cluster around the 10th of the month. If early peoples were aware of these factors and linked them with the phases of the moon, they thought the full moon influenced human behavior and produced lunacy. Appearances of UFOs and assorted apparitions do seem to increase during specific periods of the lunar cycle. And as noted in Chapter 2, the human mind does seem to be involved. Many of these things have been carelessly dismissed as hallucinations because only certain people can see these things at certain times. However, a great many factors are involved. Many of these things have been carelessly dismissed. However, a great many factors are involved. Recent studies indicate that persons of high psychic potential who experience prophetic dreams and flashes of extrasensory perception are more prone to see these things than people with little or no psychic ability. Polls and tests conducted over the past century by assorted scientists indicate that about one-third of the population possesses active or latent psychic abilities. They constitute our main body of UFO witnesses. The other two-thirds have never had any personal experience of this sort, and so naturally enough dismiss all of this as utter rubbish. Two independent statistical studies of available UFO reports were conducted in 1970 and confirmed that the highest number of UFO sightings took place on Wednesdays. An amateur group, the American Flying Saucer Investigating Committee of Columbus, Ohio, ran a study of 929 UFO reports for the year 1968. And found that Wednesdays produced the greatest number, 152. A more elaborate professional computer study of 7,025 sightings from the years 1922 to 1969 was carried out by Dr. David Saunders of Colorado University. He too found that the greatest number of sightings, 1,077, occurred on Wednesdays. The lowest number in the Ohio study was 117 for Sundays. The lowest number in the Saunders study was 903 for Saturdays. Although there are only pilot studies and much more work along this line will be necessary before any definite conclusion can be reached, it is obvious that these things are not random and sporadic, but are governed by a definite time cycle of some sort. Factors of coincidence, innocent errors, misinterpretation of ordinary aircraft and mundane natural phenomena, weather balloons, and so on, must be filtered out. Another computer study of 1,200 anomalies and unusual occurrences sifted from the works of Charles Fort was recently carried out by C.L. Mallows of the Bell Telephone Laboratories. Here it was found that a broader cycle of 9.6 years was seemingly involved. The conclusion is inescapable that these cycles of activities, which pass through our world like radio waves of enormous length, must have a common cause. Damon Knight explained in his book, Charles Fort, Prophet of the Unexplained, the cause of the cycles, the controlling force that keeps them in synchronicity, must lie outside the Earth. The Bell study includes such diversified phenomena as skyfalls, odd objects dropping out of the sky, unusual storms, rains of frogs, etc., things observed in space, and things seen in the sky. All of these phenomena tended to cluster, to occur simultaneously in specific months and specific years. The wave or cycle of these events were repeated approximately every 9.6 years. The study dealt largely with data from the 19th century. ancient magicians and seers were quite familiar with these cyclic factors. The earliest religion and occult lore discusses rays that periodically sweep our planet from some extraterrestrial source and cause everything from miracles to madness and catastrophes. Strangely, the Australian Aborigines, the South American Indians, and the tribes of Africa, as well as the ancient Babylonians and other early cultures, all pinpointed the Pleiades, a cluster of seven stars, and the constellation of Orion as that source of these rays. Rays from outer space are an integral part of all human folklore. Excuse me. In time, all these intangibles will be pinned down by courageous scientific investigators. Studies of this kind are still very unpopular among scientists. Although we know or have relearned that all paranormal manifestations have a tendency to occur in the same places year after year, that they follow specific patterns within their own time scale, that only specific people can witness or become involved in these events. The logical jumping off place for future investigations is to study the witnesses in depth and to explore these gateways carefully and methodically. Small groups of psychiatrists, parapsychologists, geologists, and physicists are now engaged in this study of this type. A significant factor, which is hardly a secret to the occultists, is that the window areas tend to be places where peculiar magnetic faults exist. Our haunted planet is covered with magnetic faults, and interestingly enough, many of them are grouped around the ancient mounds, temple sites, and spots where flying saucers are seen most frequently. Psychically oriented people living in these regions tend to have extraordinary experiences with elementals, angels, men in black, and spacemen. Numerous examples will be given further on. A leading authority on mythology and mysticism, poet Robert Graves, wrote, "There are some sacred places made so by the radiation created by magnetic ores. My village, for example, is a kind of natural amphitheater enclosed by mountains containing iron ore, which makes the magnetic field. Most holy places in the world, holy not by some accident, like a hero dying or being born there, are of this sort. Delphi was a heavily charged holy place." Back in the Middle Ages, the Vatican pointedly ordered that new churches should be constructed on the site of old temples whenever possible. The tradition of sacred places runs deep and seems to be largely based upon the continuous observation of paranormal manifestations. The entities who allegedly approached human beings in miraculous events frequently ordered a church or temple to be built on the spot. But we didn't need an order to erect the great churches of Lourdes or Fatima after the entities appeared there. Remember the legendary 19-year cycle of Stonehenge, when the god was supposed to appear. Multiply the 14 cycle of 9.6 years by 2. 9.6 seems to be the magic number here. A magnetic survey of the United States was carried out by the government in 1950s. Maps detailing magnetic variations in nearly every state can be obtained from the official or the Office of Geological Survey in Washington. Comparisons of the concentration of paranormal manifestation with these maps show unique clusters around the magnetic apparitions. Could it be that periodic sweeps of those rays from outer space set up some kind of physical or psychic reaction in these fault areas? This is a question that could be answered scientifically if only someone put up the money, equipment, and personnel to make a study. We are only reobserving the things that awed every man and inspired his superstitions and beliefs. Electromagnetic energy plays a key role in these manifestations. We are still learning about it. Our planet may be constantly interchanging energy with some outside force. This exchange of energy is an important part of the occult belief. It occurs, we are told, on every level. Chinese philosophers of long ago contended that man was moon food, such as the energy of individual souls was drained off and absorbed by some extraterrestrial force that needed such energy to replenish itself. Later, theologians extended this to form the classic explanation that we were the subjects of a war between God and the devil, a war to win the souls of man and thereby control the planet. Thus, the demons and men in black who appear in earlier times were supposed to have been after souls. They made lavish promises, according to the records, and offered fanciful philosophies and cosmologies, but as Swedenborg figured out, they're always proved to be nothing but splendid liars. Early investigators and thinkers soon realized they were dealing with magical beings who could imitate man in his works. Instead of being solid, physically stable assemblages of cells and matter, these entities are apparently temporary manifestations of energy. So the word transmogrification was used to describe them. These transmogrifications, according to the lore, could assume any form, from a wolf, to a cat, to a house, ship, iridescent god of awesome proportions. They could appear clothed in rags or in gold crown and expensive velvet robes. Worst of all, they had a penchant for playing all kinds of games with us, manipulating our fears and beliefs, and even conning us into going to war against each other. One alarming facet of these meaningless or countless messages to precipitants and contactees is their preoccupation with spreading racist propaganda. If the precipitant was an Indian, the propaganda was aimed at a nearby tribe. If he was Hindu, it was directed at the Muslims. The elementals are purveyors of hate, and perhaps much of the racial prejudice blighting the human race was originally the product of their teaching. Even these wonderful space people and brothers from other planets managed to play the game. Long John Neville, a New York personality, spent thousands of hours interviewing contactees and UFO buffs on the air over WNBC, and in his book, Way Out World, he offered this comment. A bit that has always bugged me is the racist propaganda which keeps cropping up from one group to another. In this area, regrettably, I'm unable to name names and cite occasions, since the allusions are always so carefully phrased so that offenders could easily deny the intentions of the remarks. But the meaning is there, never doubt it. As is usually the case, the unfavored parties, racially speaking, are the Jews and the Negroes, and the theme of both fascism and communism seem to echo from behind the scenes on more than a few occasions. But it's all part of the action. Some contactees who claim to have visited Mars blandly point out that the planet is divided into zones with the Negro and the Jewish Martians carefully segregated from the others. Even contactees of liberal persuasion repeat with some dismay the racist remarks of the Venetians. The Jews are a favorite target of this outer space propaganda, as if they haven't got enough trouble already. Until the past 5 or 6 years, racial prejudice was actually a basic part of all Western religions. After digging down to the source of these racist beliefs, there's always the ancient teachings of the dubious messengers. They have kept the human race stirred up at each other's throats for thousands of years. Now, finally, the Catholics are beginning to soften the traditional anti-Semitism, and the Mormons are beginning to face the fact that Negroes are also human beings. Aside from their inadvertent racism, the mimics are also fond of exploiting tense political situations. A band of phantom Indians plagued the settlers of Gloucester, Massachusetts back in 1692. They appeared night after night, skirmishing with the English and firing bulletless guns. Excuse me. Although the Indians never killed or scalped anyone, the colonists were understandably upset and heavily fortified their positions. The English became convinced that they were not real Indians, Sir Walter Scott reported, but that the devil and his agents had assumed such an appearance. The North American Indians have innumerable legends about an entity they call the trickster, because he would turn up occasionally and play wild and vicious pranks. Earth's phantom inhabitants play many other roles, especially in the widely accepted sphere of psychic phenomena. Telly Savalas, a famous character actor, told Hollywood reporter Dick Kleiner a weird story involving a black Cadillac. Happens when Savalas was young and flat broke, his car ran out of gas on Long Island, and after he started walking, a black Cadillac seemed to appear from nowhere. The driver offered him a lift. The driver was dressed entirely in white, a refreshing switch, and said very little. But at one point, he offered Savalas $1 to buy some gas. The actor insisted the man write down his name and address on a slip of paper so he could be repaid. Found a gas station in the driveway while Savalas bought a can of gasoline. Then they drove back to the car in silence. "I know Harry Agonis," the driver said suddenly. Savalas asked who Henry Agonis was. "He's a utility infielder on the Boston Red Sox," the man answered. That was the end of the conversation. The man waited while Savalas poured the gasoline into the car, gave him a push to get him started, then drove off with a wave. The next day, Savalas was shaken by newspaper headlines announcing the sudden death of Harry Agonis. He decided to call the phone number on the slip of paper given to him by the man in the white suit. It was in Massachusetts, and a woman answered. Savalas told her he wanted to speak to Bill, the name of the on the paper. There was a pause, and another woman came on the line. "I just met Bill last night," Savalas began, "and something happened, and I wanted..." "You met him last night," she interrupted, choking on sudden tears. Then she told him that her husband, Bill, had been dead for 3 years. Later, she met with Savalas in New York and told him that her husband had been buried in a white suit. She showed him the last letter her husband had written, And he was startled to see that the handwriting exactly matched the handwriting on the slip of paper driven by the Cadillac driver. The whole fabric of psychic belief is woven with such stories, which number in the many thousands, are accepted by millions as proof of survival after death. But the investigator informed in the antics of the ultra-terrestrial mimics are obliged to look deeper. These entities labor to cultivate beliefs in various frames of references, and then they deliberately create new manifestations that support those beliefs. Savalas rode in a physically real Cadillac and spoke with a seemingly real man. The incident was only a joke of some kind. It was a very complicated and pointless one. Phantom campers, vehicles with built-on trailers have been widely reported in the western states in recent years. We have reports of phantom airplanes and helicopters by the hundreds. In the 1930s, thousands of people in northern Europe saw formations of mysterious airplanes over Norway, Sweden, and Finland. Despite extensive searches by the military forces of several countries, the source of these ghost flyers, as they are called, were never determined. During World War II, military intelligence groups collected a number of phantom airplane sightings from pilots returning from missions. Crews of several bombers from the 92nd Group reported the followings over Germany. Four P-47s, thought to be friendly American aircraft flown by the enemy, were observed on the approach to the initial point at 22,000 feet, heading 120-degree magnetic. These aircraft flew out to the side in parallel with combat wing formation in the manner of fighter escort. They suddenly executed a 90-degree turn in towards the head of the combat wing formation. These aircraft were originally at 800 yards on the port beam. They approached 300 yards when they nose up and away, showing a full plan view of themselves. Positive identification is claimed. The aircraft had brown fuselages, and the wings were very dark color, almost black. No white cowling and no white tail markings were observed. No insignia was observed, and the aircraft did not open fire. Several B-17s fired on them. Last B-47 escort had long since departed, and the enemy aircraft had been attacking for some time at this point. The opening theory expressed in this intelligence report for P-47s thought to be friendly American aircraft flown by the enemy was proven invalid. The mystery planes did not fire at the American bombers, but were fired on instead. If the Germans had attempted such a ploy with captive aircraft, they certainly would have pointed or painted appropriate signal on the planes. And after succeeding or in getting within 300 yards of the bomber, the pilots, if they were German, would certainly have opened fire. Said they scooted away, never to be seen again. Low-flying mystery airplanes, reported in 1969-70, were most often described as resembling P-38s, the twin-engine, dual-fuselage fighters used in the Pacific in World War II. They were fast, noisy aircraft, but our mystery planes move very slowly and in complete silence. They execute impossible maneuvers, such as sudden right angle turns, and disappear mysteriously as they come. Only a handful of P-38s are still operational, and they are not the culprits in these cases. Like the ghost flyers of 1934, they are a dull gray and violate all regulations by failing to show any license number or insignia. Could these phantom aircraft be part and parcel of the same phenomena that produce phantom automobiles and campers? Could they also be apparitions and transmogrifications of energy that can properly categorized with the disappearing Indians of Gloucester? The evidence suggests that this could very well be the case. In other ages, flying ships were sometimes reported. England's Scholarly Flying Saucer Review, May through June 1970, reprinted a fascinating story from 1743. A farmer named Pueblo, Wales, claimed he had seen a flying sailboat that year. He estimated that it was about 1,500 feet in the air and could have been about 90 tons. The keelless ship was clearly seen, thus ruling out mirages of ships far out at sea. Similar phenomena had been reported in the same area about 10 years previous. Ferry lore is often filled with alleged sightings of ferry ship complete with billowing sails. Our problem is compounded by these amazing, confusing, and alas, scientifically inadmissible subjective observations. The UFO cults have solved this dilemma by simply throwing out this kind of material and concentrating only on those reports that describe circular or cigar-shaped objects. We must, however, consider all the forms reported with equal care if you are to arrive at any valid conclusion. There is no way to investigate a flying saucer after it has flown, but it is possible to study the people who saw it in the terrain over which it appeared. If we are dealing with clever mimics and transmogrifications of energy, and if man has been observing these things throughout his history, then the real clues may be found in the thousands of volumes in all languages describing these observations and encounters. One basic fact should be obvious from the foregoing. These entities and things are not necessarily from some other planet. They were actually closely tied to the human race, or a part of our immediate environment in some unfathomable fashion, and to a very large extent are primarily concerned with misleading us, misinforming us, and playing games with us. These mysterious members of the Wilson wings over the world are our benefactors and our enemies. They educate us and they torment us. They have given us hope, guided our religions and philosophies, and watched us crawl out of the caves and build rockets to the moons. They may have watched our civilizations come and go. They may have sincerely helped us to preserve the memories of those lost ages and those past mistakes. Or, it all may be rubbish, and we may be nothing more than the pawns in which they play their mischievous games. Theologians and philosophers have always been troubled by the nearly impossible task of sorting the real from the unreal, the truth from the false. Perhaps the only workable criterion is the ancient one of judging them by their works. That was Chapter 9 of Our Haunted Planets, Mimics of Man by John A. Keel. And it was published by Galdi Press. And Phyllis Galdi is, I consider her a friend of mine. She has Fate Magazine. So if you get a chance, go to FateMagazine.com and check out the book, Our Haunted Planet, or you can find it at our radio site at our book review at burlingtonnews.net/book_review. And we want to thank you for listening to this one chapter of Our Haunted Planet. It sells for $14.95. Again, Our Haunted Planet, John A. Keel.